so difficult to clean. No, I was not going to let these police officers get us in trouble. Jawad Saab will not be pleased if you walk around his house while he's not here, I called out.
And who will tell him?
The taller one turned around and studied my face.
You'd be smart to remember he's not the only one who can leave bruises.
If you have a message for him, I can relay it.
My message is for you to mind your business. The guards understand this, and the boy over there definitely does. You'd be wise to follow their lead. Yes, go sweep the stairs, little girl. This doesn't concern you,
the mustached one said. It does concern me, I pointed to their shoes. You've tracked mud into the foyer, and once it gets to the carpet, I can't imagine anyone, especially Jawad Saab, will be happy to see your footprints.
She's right.
Jawad Saab stood at the front door. Nasreen Bhaji clutched his arm.
The girl misunderstood us, the tall one sputtered. We were only inquiring where you were.
And since when do you arrive unannounced?
Forgive us, but the orders came from above. Our boss told us to get word to you immediately.
Jawad Saab stared at them.
You'd be smart to remember. You have more than one boss, he said. Yes, Jawad Saab, you are right, the taller officer said.
The vein at the base of Jawad Saab's neck throbbed. He strode to the backyard. The officers hurried after him.
Well done, Amal, Nasreen Bhaji said.
That couldn't have been easy. None of this is easy, I wanted to tell her. My new life was simply about making choices, none of which I actually wished to make. Chapter 29. I walked into the kitchen with Nasreen Bhaji's empty lunch tray that afternoon. When I stepped through the double doors, Hamid was patting down balls of dough, while Fatima and Nabila were setting the servant plates and bowls onto the counter.
Had a bit of flour left over, so I'm making us some fresh rotis, Hamid said when he saw me.
He slapped a floured circle of dough onto the skillet and flipped it.
Get the food quick while it's nice and warm. We'll clean up after.
I hadn't had fresh rotis in so long. I quickly made myself a plate along with the other servants. I trailed behind Mumtaz and sat down next to her.
Is it true?
Hamid asked me when he joined us.
Did you really talk back to those officers?
She did, Bilal said. I froze up, as usual.
No one blames you for being afraid around those monsters, Mumtaz said. Not one bit. Were they the same police officers that came by last time?
Ghulam asked between bites.
No, Bilal said.
These were different ones. It's a parade of them these days, Ghulam remarked.
Bilal shrugged and picked at his food. He didn't say anything. I was lucky I got to work for Nasreen Bhaji. I couldn't imagine having to cater to a person like Jawad Saab. I cleaned up my dishes and put them away. When I stepped into the hallway, Bilal and Nabila followed behind.
Thank you.
Bilal stuffed his hands into his kameez.
Thank you for speaking up. You really saved me.
Oh, I said. That's okay. Really.
Well, Nabila and I were talking.
He glanced at her and then at me.
We know you like reading and were enjoying Jawad's library, weren't you?
It was a mistake, I said stiffly. I shouldn't have done it.
But what if you could read again? Nabila asked.
I stared at her.
Well, we were talking about it, and I know when he's here, when he's gone, and when he's coming back, Bilal said. So maybe, if we were the lookout, you could borrow books again.
Why? I asked.
Why would you help me?
Because we owe you, Nabila said.
It's our way to thank you.
He would notice his books were missing, I said.
Not if he forgot those books are even there. Come on, she said. Follow us.
I trailed behind them down the hall to the library. Nabila walked over to one of the filing cabinets. She and Bilal pulled it forward to reveal a bookshelf wedged behind it.
He jammed that new cabinet in there a few months back and hasn't moved it since. He probably doesn't even remember that there are books behind it.
I looked at Nabila. As tempting as the books were, how many times could I fall for her tricks?
Amal, Nabila said. I know I haven't made it easy. I'm sorry. But you can trust us. Really. You're one of us now. As Mumtaz says, we have to look out for each other.
I looked at her and then at the books. I slipped out a thin collection of poems and short stories. I ran my hand over the cover.
I didn't expect to have this chance again, to be able to turn pages and learn new things and keep my mind alive. I couldn't say no. It was worth the risk to have books in my life again.
Chapter 30. Bilal and Nabila remained true to their word. It had been 1 month since I began borrowing books from the library again. I'd gone through 7 already.
You'll have a few hours now if you want to get a book, Bilal whispered to me now as we cleaned up after breakfast. Thanks, I told him. I'll go in a few minutes.
I put away the breakfast tray and rinsed out the milk saucer before slipping into the library to get a book. I barely glanced at the title before cloaking it in my chador. My hand shook, waiting as I always did for someone to walk in on me, but no one did. Nasreen Bhaji was resting when I stepped into her room, so I had some time to read. I closed my door halfway and sat down on the bed. I looked down at the book, God's Own Land, and turned to the first page.
You think I might be able to read books like that one day? A voice whispered.
I nearly leapt off the bed, but it was just Fatima. She lingered by the edge of the door.
Yes.
I gestured for her to close the door.
I know reading seems really complicated right now, but once you get the hang of it, it will be as easy as breathing. Could you read to me?
She took a step toward me.
Well,
I looked down at the book.
This book is a little complicated. That's okay. I just want to hear it.
Fatima sat down next to me and I read to her. I was wrong to expect her to get restless. Instead, she hung on to every word.
Mumtaz and I are taking a break outside. Join us?
Nabila asked me later that day, after Nasreen Bhaji had gone to visit a friend. The thought of spending time with her still made me uneasy, but my mother's words from arguments with my sisters came to mind. You have to find a way to get along. You can't cast off your family. Nabila wasn't my family, but she was who I lived with now. I had to do my part and make peace. I joined Nabila and Mumtaz on a charpai on the veranda. Rain drizzled down in the garden, and a warm mist coated the air.
Here, have some soda, Mumtaz said, handing us cola bottles.
Went to the store this morning for a few things. Figured you girls could use a treat.
Thank you, I said.
No shaking it this time, Nabila, Mumtaz said. Remember what happened last time?
As if anyone lets me forget anything in this house, Nabila exclaimed.
Mumtaz laughed and took a sip of tea.
Did the soda erupt? I asked.
Yes, and how was I supposed to know it would sputter and fly out like that? Nabila protested. You shake up the mango juice and nothing happens. I figured it would be the same.
My sister made that mistake, too. She jumped up and down so much the top flew off. Our ceiling is still stained from the fizzy soda. See? Nabila smiled at me before turning to Mumtaz. I'm not the only one who's done that. It's a common mistake.
I smiled back at her. Nabila didn't need to know Safa was 2 years old when this happened. I removed the metal top and took a sip of the frosty drink. The fizzy bubbles reminded me of my sister's laughter.
Can't remember the last time we had a good rainfall.
Mumtaz nodded to the sky.
When I first came here, it seemed like my husband and I sat here all the time, watching the raindrops dance.
Your husband?
Yes. He was a gardener for the estate many years ago.
You lived together here?
We lived with his family back then. But when my husband passed, I decided I'd rather live here.
How bad must it have been at her husband's home to choose this as a better alternative?
But then I realized that Praveen had done the same thing. She lived in a shed behind our house instead of with her parents or her late husband's family. I had always assumed she came to live with us because she wanted to be near us, but perhaps it was more complicated than that.
It's nice that you're teaching Fatima to read, Nabila said. She's so proud of herself, can't stop tracing the latest letter you taught her.
I'm glad she's enjoying it, I said. It's not too late for you to learn to read, Mumtaz said, nudging Nabila. I'm sure Amal could teach you.
Yes, I could, I said, trying to hide my surprise that Nabila couldn't read. But it made sense. Nabila came when she was Fatima's age, and where would she have had the chance to keep up with whatever she might have learned before?
Maybe, Nabila said, but she quickly changed the topic.
Did you hear the latest on the wedding drama?
I haven't, Mumtaz lowered her chai.
The latest girl Nasreen Bhaji wants Jawed Saab to see is Rashida's daughter.
Now that's something, Mumtaz shook her head.
Jawed was engaged to a cousin in that family, Nabila explained to me.
He was engaged? Well, barely. It only lasted 2 days. They didn't even announce it before he changed his mind, Mumtaz said.
That's what he says, Nabila scoffed. I heard she called it off when she heard about his temper. He was crushed.
That's a foolish girl if that's true, Mumtaz said.
Why? I asked. If she said no to him, she sounds like a smart girl to me.
Nonsense, Mumtaz said. This is a good life for someone who knows how to comport herself and is smart enough to figure him out.
It's not fair, I said. Why should anyone have to figure him out?
No, it's not fair. But that's life.
There it was yet again, my father's words. Life isn't fair. Maybe it was true, but why was that a reason to just accept everything and go along with it? I hoped the rumor about the girl turning down Jawed Saab was true. I hoped there really was someone out there who had the courage to stand up to him and say no.
Chapter 31. Nasreen Bhaji shut the phone and sighed. She was sitting in the sunken living room next to Jawed Saab as I handed her a cup of chai. The television was on low in the background.
What's the matter? Jawed Saab asked.
Ziba canceled our shopping trip to Lahore again.
You probably don't want to go anyway, he said. Traffic is terrible there these days.
I need a new sari for your cousin's wedding, and I'm 2 seasons behind with all my clothes. But ever since Ziba's grandchild was born, she has no time.
Go yourself, then.
It's lonely traveling to the city alone. Come with me.
She reached out and patted his hand.
We haven't done anything together in so long.
You know how much work I have.
She frowned. Then she looked at me.
That's it.
Amal, you're coming with me, Nasreen said.
Me?
It's a long drive. 2 hours if the traffic cooperates. Pack some dried snacks, water, and a thermos with chai.
Would Jawed Saab interject? Tell her I couldn't leave the estate?
He clicked on his phone and said nothing.
Going to Lahore? Nabila asked me when I walked into the kitchen.
Yes, I need to get her snacks and tea in order.
I said cautiously. Did she wish she was going instead of me? We'd gotten along fine in the months since our truce, but I couldn't completely forget her treachery.
The bags get really heavy, she said. By the end, my arms usually feel like they'll fall off. Make sure to put the bags down every chance you get.
Thanks for the tip, I said, and she smiled at me. Sitting across from Nasreen Baji in the black town car that afternoon, we drove past cotton fields, orange groves, and sugarcane fields. Soon, my neighborhood snapped into view as we turned down the main street, the same one whose path I'd traveled nearly every week. We passed by the open-air market. Shokat stood outside, talking to a kulfi vendor. I pressed my fingers against the darkened glass, watching the market slide past me, out of sight.
Was that Shokat? Nasreen Baji asked.
Yes, I said.
For a second I thought it was his father. Things looked quiet there.
It's not delivery day. On Tuesdays and Fridays, you can't find a spot to stand.
2 shipments a week? That's impressive.
They've added more space in the back. You can't see it from the road.
I forget how it is with our villages. Only those who live there know exactly what is going on.
We drove past my street, and then, for a brief moment, my house flitted in and out of view. It looked smaller somehow. I wondered if all my memories of home would grow as distant as Nasreen Baji's had. Watching my village slip away in the rear view, I felt like I was losing a piece of myself. I thought I knew what Lahore would be like, but it was one thing to read about it in a book or see it on television, and another to experience it for myself. Unlike the steady stream of the highway, here rickshaws, motorcycles, trucks, and cars shared the narrow roads alongside bicycles and throngs of people. Stores pressed against other stores on either side of us. Large signs in Urdu and in English towering on billboards overhead. Suddenly the car jerked to a stop.
We can't be there yet, can we? Nasreen Baji asked Ghulam. Almost. It's another one of those protests blocking traffic.
What's this one about?
She leaned against the car seat and sighed.
Judge Barsi,
he said as the car snaked slowly through the snarl of traffic.
That's what the signs say, anyhow.
I looked out the window. The sidewalks and streets up ahead were filled with people holding signs. Some had photos of the judge, with angry red X's splashed across his face. A woman in a red hijab stood on a crate. She picked up a horn and shouted,
"Jail Judge Barsi!"
The crowd chanted along with her, and their voices made the car vibrate.
So a judge does something they don't like, and we pay the price by sitting in traffic?
Nasreen Baji complained.
I swear, every week they find something new to get angry about.
I'd seen protests on the news, but seeing it in person, I felt the energy in the air. Even through the closed and darkened window, it crackled through me. At last, we reached the bazaar. I hopped out of the car and trailed behind Nasreen Baji through the arched entrance into the Anarkali Bazaar. The smell of samosas and pakoras filled the air. In my old village, there was one stall for all the snack foods. Here, stall after stall was lined up as far as I could see. Men shouted their prices over one another, and their voices echoed through the bazaar. We passed 4 different spice stores, each with turmeric and chilies lining the shelves, and spices in colors and with names I had never seen before. Streams of people brushed past us, and with the loud bargaining, the laughter, the arguing, and the honking of cars in the distance, everything felt like it was merging into one beating pulse. And the people. Some girls were dressed like me in plain shalwar kameezes. Other girls wore pants and blouses. I saw some fully covered with nothing but their eyes revealed, while others wore short-sleeved shirts. All this time I'd wanted to travel to faraway cities, but here, just a few hours away, was Lahore. another planet. We passed a shoe store, a handbag store, and a shop where rows and rows of bangles lined the walls. I wanted to take a moment and absorb everything, but I had to keep up with Nasreen Budgie as she hurried toward the sari shop. Stepping inside, I stood against the back wall. Nasreen Budgie sat down on a red cushioned pillow and pointed to the rows of fabric lining the walls. The shopkeepers pulled off the bolts of silk and unfurled them across the floor in front of her. Soon the floor was a sea of green, sky blue, and petal pink. It would take hours for them to put everything back in place, but the men didn't seem to care. Nasreen Budgie sifted through the different saris and picked three. I had never seen anyone shop with the freedom of Nasreen Budgie. After the sari shop, she walked into store after store and simply pointed to what she liked. Gold earrings, silver-heeled shoes, ruby-encrusted bangles. And just like that, they became hers. The sun was beginning to set when we got into the car. Nabila was right about the heavy bags. My arms strained from the weight of them. The sky flushed pink, then deepened into purple as we drove. It was fully set when we passed our villages. I looked at my school under the glow of the moon. Hafsa's house. My own.
You didn't tell me Shabnam is getting married, Nasreen Budgie said.
Shabnam? I repeated. That was Hafsa's oldest sister.
Shokat's daughter.
This weekend. Borrowed some money for her dowry, even though it'll still be a modest one given their financial circumstances.
Your family never mentioned it?
I don't have a phone, I told her.
Everyone has a phone. Why didn't you bring one?
Jawed Saab took mine when I first arrived.
You mean to tell me you haven't spoken to your family since you came?
I shook my head.
Your poor mother, she must be so worried. Her eyes widened.
That settles it. She deserves to see for herself that you're all right. You can have 3 days, attend the festivities, and spend some time with your family.
Would Jawed Saab let me?
Why wouldn't he? She asked.
You have time off. It's entitled to you. I'd lived at their estate long enough, but there was still so much I didn't understand. But those thoughts were quickly replaced by thoughts of home. How badly did I miss the familiar curve of my bed? My mother's food. Seema and my little sisters. My friends. I knew I should thank Nasreen Budgie, tell her how much this meant to me. But how could I possibly express my gratitude? Words failed. I could go home. However briefly, I could go home.
Chapter 32.
Can't you drive faster? I asked Ghulam.
I'm driving no slower and no faster than I ever do, he replied.
But a little faster wouldn't hurt anyone, please.
You're going to pay the cost to fix this car if something happens to it? He laughed.
Ghulam Baba, I pleaded, just this once.
He shook his head, but he glanced at me in the rearview mirror and winked. The engine hummed louder, and the scenery passed faster now. Soon my neighborhood sprang into view. Water buffalo roamed the distant fields. A group of boys kicked a faded soccer ball in the street. The car jerked to a stop. Children pointed at it and blocked its path. I pushed the door open. Ghulam rolled down his window.
What are you doing? He asked. It's just one block over.
I can't wait, I shouted. Thanks for the ride.
I broke into a run down the road. There it was, the rose bushes. The worn front door creaked when I opened it, like always. As I stepped inside, it felt like the past few months had been a terrible nightmare. And now it was over. I was home. Safa and Rabia stood by the couch. They were so engrossed in their argument, they didn't see me at first. I took in their flushed cheeks
and hands on their hips as their complaints echoed off the concrete walls. Seema peeled a cucumber by the stove. She turned to hush them. That's when she saw me. She gasped. Her knife clattered to the ground.
Amal!
She shouted. She rushed toward me and wrapped me in a hug. I had forgotten what it was like to feel someone's embrace.
Budge is here!
Rabia and Safa shrieked in unison. Their eyes lit up like a string of lights on Eid. They dashed toward me. I picked them both up and hugged them. I didn't know how I would ever let go.
Amal?
My mother. She carried my little sister Lubna in her arms. Her hair was loose and damp, grayer than it had been 3 months earlier. She walked toward me and stroked my hair, as if checking to make sure I was real. Then, her expression crumbled. She folded me into her arms.
They said I could come for a few days.
I hugged her.
For the wedding. I can't believe I'm home right now.
I called you every day. The phone rang without answer, and then one day it stopped ringing altogether. Had to wait the longest time before I could get word you were all right. She wiped tears from her eyes. He took my phone the first day. I've been desperate to talk to you, to all of you.
Seema, get your father, my mother said.
Amal, sit here. Let me get a good look at you.
Despite the exhaustion lining her face, she looked like my mother again.
Our dolls missed you,
Rabia said, holding out her patchwork doll to me. Safa hurried over with hers as well. They talked over each other, sharing all the adventures I missed. I marveled at Safa's words, the first time I'd heard her speak so clearly. Lubna was a plump baby now, with soft curls like Safa's and Rabia's. I held out my hands to pick her up, but she pulled back, studying me shyly from my mother's arms. She had no memories of gripping my hand and looking into my eyes all those hours when she was a newborn. I was not an older sister to her. I was a stranger.
How are you doing there, in that house? My mother asked.
I fidgeted in my seat. I waited so long to come here, to let go of everything weighing on my heart. But the thing was, she looked so happy to see me. After everything I put her through, how could I add more burdens on her back?
Nasreen Budgie treats me well,
I managed to say.
I'm lucky I work for her.
Good,
she exhaled.
I know it's not easy, but I know how strong you are.
Strong? What did it mean to be strong? Did I have any other choice? Before I could say anything more on this, the front door opened. My father stepped inside. He walked straight over to me and hugged me, his face wet with tears. With his arms around me, for the first time since I came home, I cried. The room grew quiet when I pulled away.
I'm sorry.
I wiped my eyes.
Don't be, my mother said.
You are free here.
The door opened again.
I thought my ears were playing tricks on me.
Parveen!
I raced over to hug her.
Where is Omar?
Oh, Amal.
She winced. He's at orientation this weekend.
Orientation?
Yes. For the boarding school, remember?
I remembered now.
Our conversation by the stream. It felt like a lifetime ago now. He starts in the fall, and they wanted the new students to come spend the weekend there to get acquainted. He's going to be so upset he missed your visit.
I'm so glad things are moving along with that, I told her.
And I was. If my own future had to be yanked away, at least Omar had one. We ate dinner in the courtyard that night. I fixed myself a plate of kardai chicken and the fresh wheat roti my mother had made minutes earlier.
I had no idea how badly I missed my mother's food until I took a bite. Hamid was a good cook, but there was nothing in the world that could compare to my mother's food.
Did you know I'm learning to read? Rabia told me.
Seema's teaching her, my mother nodded. She'll start school in a few weeks.
When can I start? Safa frowned. When you can behave, Rabia stuck out her tongue.
Seema interceded to cut off their argument. My mother grabbed Safa and put her in her lap. When the conversation turned to the preparations for Hafsa's sister's wedding, everyone started talking at once, and I found it difficult to focus. I felt overwhelmed by the laughter, chatter, and squeals of my sisters, the sounds that I had missed so much. I tried to still myself and soak it all in, to hold on to when I was gone. I used to complain to Omar about my chaotic home. I took any opportunity to escape to the sugarcane fields when the noise became too much. Why did I get so annoyed at the sound of my sister's chatter? Why did I get frustrated with my chores? Why did it take leaving my ordinary life behind to appreciate how precious it truly was?
Okay, girls, my mother said when the last of the rotis vanished from the hot pot. Seema, watch the baby while I get the girls ready for bed.
I can do it, I said.
Nonsense. You're our guest here for a short while. Relax.
Guest? It was just an offhand remark. They meant it kindly. But to call me a guest in the only place I ever belonged? The word cut like a jagged stone against my heart. Chapter 33. I helped Safa and Rabia put on their matching yellow frocks for the mehndi. Tonight was the first of the wedding festivities, and it was my favorite day because, unlike the actual wedding ceremony tomorrow, which could be a bit somber, the mehndi was a happy celebration where everyone danced, sang, and decorated each other's hands and feet with henna.
Thanks for getting the girls dressed, my mother said as she stepped into our room. Here are your outfits.
She handed Seema and me our freshly pressed clothes. I put on the orange silk kameez and green churidar pajamas that I'd worn to my cousin's wedding late last year. After so long wearing simple cotton, this fabric felt smooth and light against my skin.
You look pretty, Seema said. Orange always looks good on you.
So do you, I told her.
I don't remember your outfit. Did Amma have it dyed a different color from when it was mine?
No. This outfit is new, she grinned. The tailor measured me twice to make sure it fit just right.
It's beautiful, I said. I was glad Seema got to wear an outfit that was all her own. But knowing the reason why, because she had replaced me as the eldest in my family, saddened me too. Our conversation was interrupted by a knock on the front door.
Amal!
I knew the voice before I turned around. It was Hafsa.
You're back!
She hugged me.
I just heard. I knew your father would come up with the money. I knew he would.
I'm only here for the weekend, I said.
Oh.
Her smile faded. Hafsa grew quiet and glanced at Seema and then back at me.
Well, I'm glad you're here now, she finally said. How have you been?
It's been hard, but I'm managing, I said.
Oh,
she said. There it was again, that unfamiliar silence. I waited for her to ask me about the estate, about Jawed Saab and what it was like to live there. Here I was with all the first-hand information she could ever dream of, but instead, the quiet continued to stretch between us while she studied the ground. I cleared my throat.
How's Miss Sadia?
She's good,
Hafsa perked up.
But she still goes over our class time.
Yeah, Seema nodded.
Some things don't change, especially around here.
Well, except for that building, right?
Hafsa said to Seema. She turned to me.
It opens next week. We were all wrong, weren't we?
What building?
The one with the green door, she said.
I was right. Hansab's family was building it, but it wasn't a factory. It's a literacy center.
So the center Nazreen Budgie had bragged about to her friend was the mysterious building we watched go up. And it was in my own village.
No one's going to go, Hafsa said. They don't want to touch anything that family is involved with.
But it's free, isn't it? I said.
Nothing with him is free, Hafsa said. You of all people know that.
Hafsa, my mother said as she walked into the room. Your mom just called. She was looking for you.
Oops, she said. I better go. Get there on time, okay? Farah and I are going to do a dance.
Before I could respond, she raced out the door. How quickly her life had moved on. While I scraped plates and massaged migraines, she practiced dance steps with our classmate Farah. They got to go to school and dream about a future. I knew Hafsa missed me and cared about me, but she got to barrel forward, her life uninterrupted, while my future had fallen completely off its tracks. Would Farah be Hafsa's roommate someday? Chapter 34. Pink, green, and yellow lights illuminated the tent Hafsa's parents erected behind their home for the Mehndi. I stepped onto the carpeted floor of the tent with my family. My father wandered over to the folding chairs set up outside the tent for the men under the night sky. Rabia and Safa held tight to my kameez, as if I might vanish without warning. The bride, Hafsa's eldest sister, Shabanam, sat perched on a cushioned stage in the center of the tent. A yellow veil framed her face, and her hands were already covered with henna patterns. Now the henna artist was swirling intricate designs of flowers and birds onto her feet. We walked over to sit on the cushions below Shabanam's stage. I smiled a little at how subdued she seemed. Hafsa and her sisters were not the docile sort, but the bride was doing her best to look the part for the occasion. Seema picked up a henna cone left out for the guests to use and began swirling it on my hand.
Are you done? I asked her after a while. My hand is aching. Be patient. I have to get the pattern right. You squirm too much.
Sorry. I tried to still myself. The designs on my palms would take hours to dry, but tomorrow the deep brown Seema painted on would transform into a brilliant orange. It would eventually fade away completely, but for a little while, when I was back at Jawad Saab's estate, these hands would remain colored with the memory of this night. A new song started up, and I watched Hafsa and Farah dance with a third girl. It was Sana, Nasreen Baji's niece. Their braids were woven with marigolds, and they wore matching outfits. Chatter swirled around me, gossip about the groom, the dowry.
You poor dear, a woman said to me.
It was Hira, the butcher's wife. She settled next to me and tucked her feet under herself.
Everyone is beside themselves about you having to live in the same place as that monster.
What's it like there? Another woman asked.
Drove by the place once, but you can't even see the roof from the road.
It's those walls he's got, my neighbor Balkis interjected. Walls and bushes to keep everyone far away.
Does he have a waterfall in the house? Hira asked me.
No, there's no waterfall, I said.
I knew a woman who worked for them years ago. Told me about a waterfall right in their living room.
Heard about the gold staircases, too, Balkis nodded.
Now that Nasreen, Hira clucked her tongue, came from the village over on the other side of the market, but thinks she's something else now. Doesn't even bother to see her family anymore.
She's nice, I interrupted. She's been good to me, she really has. But they continued their conversation as though I hadn't spoken. I watched their animated expressions
and listened to the theories of Nasreen Baji's past and the details of the estate. Seema squeezed my wrist.
"Ignore them," she said. "They're just gossiping."
She was right. For these women, my circumstances were a juicy story. One they could whisper about and cluck their tongues over before moving on to other things. They didn't have to tiptoe around Jawad Saab. They didn't have to be wrenched away from everyone they loved. They weren't bad people. They were just lucky enough to have no idea of the reality I faced. Chapter 35. Ghulam would be here to pick me up any minute. As I packed boxes of my favorite biscuits into my suitcase for Fatima and the others, there was a knock on the door. Seema went to open it, but instead of Ghulam, it was Fozia.
"I brought these for you," Fozia said.
She stepped inside with a box of yellow laddus. She set it on the table.
"Thank you. I've missed your sweets," I said.
"Seema," my mother said, "can you get a plate for them?"
"No, no, they're for Amal.
I know how much she loves them," Fozia said. "I came to say goodbye, and I had a question."
She hesitated.
"I heard you work for Nasreen. Do you think if you talk to her about something, she might listen?"
"Why?" I asked her. "What happened?" Fozia shook her head and squeezed her eyes shut. Tears slipped down her cheeks.
"Tell me, please." I grabbed her hands. "What's wrong?" "It's ever since we replaced that roof, and then we needed a little more to fix our freezer. And then there was the wedding. We're paying as much as we can each month. But when his officer came to collect last time, he said if we don't increase our payments soon, he'll take drastic measures. But we can't pay any more than we already are. We can't!"
"Fozia," my mother said, "Amal is a servant in their home. What power do you think she has? Look how indebted we are."
There was the sound of a car pulling up, and the back door creaked open. Seema rushed into the living room as my father stepped inside.
"Ghulam is outside, but he said you could take your time."
Fozia stood.
"I don't know what I was thinking."
She looked at my mother and me.
"Except, if there was a chance, I had to ask."
"I know."
My mother hugged her. I blinked back tears after Fozia left.
"I wish I could help her."
"Amal, even if you could help them, imagine who else will come to you for the same," my mother said.
She put her arm around me. It was then I noticed her arms were bare.
"Where are your gold bangles?" I asked.
My mother glanced at my father.
"She sold them," he said.
But those bangles were as much a part of my mother as her long wavy hair. I couldn't remember a moment she didn't have them on.
"It's the first thing we did when you left," Seema said. "We were sure we could work something out, but even with her wedding jewelry, the tractor, the television, even if we sold them all, it wouldn't be enough. Not even close."
I looked at my mother, at my sisters. Seema's arms were crossed, her face ashen. They had tried everything they could think of to get me back and failed. So if they were continuing with their lives, it was because they had no other choice. Just like me.
"I'm not leaving that place, am I?" I whispered to my father.
I waited for him to answer my question. Instead, he hugged me tight. I hugged the rest of my family goodbye. My mother, my sisters. I kissed the baby. She smiled at me and cooed, but I knew I would soon be a stranger to her again. I thought coming home would help me feel better, but now all I could see was my mother's bare wrists, Fozia's frightened face,
and a baby sister who would never know me.
How many lives had this man upended? Why did no one stop him?
Chapter 36. It felt strange to be back at the Han estate. The marble tiles, immaculate white hallways, and enormous windows devoid of dust or fingerprints. None of this was foreign anymore. Nasreen had smiled when I brought her tea upon my return. Nabila admired my intricate orange henna designs, and Fatima hugged me and didn't let go until she extracted a promise of a lesson as soon as our work was done. It was strange to step into this house and not feel terrified. To see people who welcomed me back. It wasn't long ago I was completely alone here. I pressed Nasreen Baji's clothing that night and hung them in her armoire while she reclined on her bed and listened to me describe the wedding. She asked me about the tent and the decorations, and the type of jewels in Shabanam's wedding necklace. As I described the velvet wedding dress in full detail, and the satchels of dates and almonds the groom's family passed out for each guest, it almost felt like I was gossiping with a friend. The purse she carried was so tiny that it looked like a small fan, but it was big enough to hold all the gift envelopes, I told her. My sister Seema joked it had to have invisible layers hidden within to keep it expanding.
Was my sister there? She asked.
Yes, and I saw your niece Sana. She danced with my friends at the wedding.
Last time I saw Sana, she couldn't crawl. Now she's dancing?
Crawl? I asked. But she's Seema's age. You haven't seen her in
11 years, she said. Time gets away from you.
But it's your family, I bit my tongue. I shouldn't have said anything, but how could she find time to go to Lahore for shopping trips and not have time to see her family who lived just 10 minutes away?
I want to see them, she said quietly. Used to go once a week when I first got married. But after a while, Hansab thought it was best his wife not mingle with villagers. And I agreed. But he takes care of them. Make sure they want for nothing.
Nasreen Baji had a bedroom that was practically the size of my house, and the finest food and clothing. But she couldn't see the people she wanted to see the most. Her cage was nicer than mine, but it was still a cage. I cleared my throat. I brought something for you. I went into my room and returned with a box.
What's this? She smiled.
Laddus. I thought you might like them.
They look homemade.
My neighbor Fozia made it, Shokat's wife. It felt strange saying Fozia's name in this estate, remembering how frightened she had looked.
I haven't had a homemade laddu since I was a child.
She's known for her sweets. Her daughter is one of my best friends. Nasreen Baji lifted a yellow confection from the box and took a bite. She closed her eyes. Do you like it? She fell silent for a few seconds.
It tastes like home, she said.
A knock on the bedroom door interrupted us. Jawed Saab stepped inside.
He keeps calling me, he said.
He waved his phone at Nasreen Baji.
5 missed calls while I'm in the shower.
Jawed, Nasreen Baji sighed.
You think I have nothing else to do but cater to his demands?
Well, if you helped him with the center, he wouldn't call so much, Nasreen Baji said.
He needs you.
This literacy center is going to get him more votes for the next election, but only if people attend it.
Why is that my problem? I have more than enough of my own things to deal with, and I have better things to do than force people to attend a ridiculous center.
Jawed, if a journalist comes snooping and finds no one there, it could hurt your father's election campaign. And that affects all of us. The school can sit empty after the election for all it matters. If we don't get at least one person there by next week, the teacher said he's going to leave.
Jawed Saab exhaled loudly,
and then his eyes settled on mine.
What about her?
What do you mean?
She can go to the center. He laughed at her astonished expression. It's not such a far-fetched idea, he said. We'll send her once a week. The center will officially have a student, and the teacher will have something to do. Problem solved.
Chawad, it's a literacy center for adults.
Better her than no one at all.
Me? Attend a literacy center? That meant I could see a teacher again. Maybe they could show me how to write the poem I had wanted to write months earlier. Maybe they had books I could borrow. I studied Nasreen Baji, not daring to hope, but then...
Fine, she said. Until we can get some actual other people to start going, she can attend.
Chapter 37 Ghulam dropped me off at the curb of the school. The bright yellow building with the green door was so different from the gray and brick structures I was accustomed to. I liked its color. It was the color of hope. The interior smelled of fresh paint. Soft overhead lights lent warmth to the space. A girl with two braids tied with ribbons sat at a desk in a reception area with a patchwork sofa and a coffee table scattered with magazines. "Here for class?" the girl asked. She twirled a pencil between her fingers. She looked familiar. Perhaps our paths had crossed at the market, or she was the relative of a neighbor or a friend. Everyone here seemed to be connected in some way.
Yes. My name is Amal.
Oh, right. We're expecting you. She stood up and led me down the hall to a classroom, where a young man greeted me.
Ah, our first student, he said. My name is Asif. I'll be your teacher.
It's a big classroom, I said, looking around a large room that held a few wooden tables and chairs.
Well, hopefully it won't seem so empty once we get more students, he said.
The way you talk, I said, it's unusual. My accent, he laughed. I went to college in the United States. I guess some sort of accent stuck. My wife teases me about it, but I thought she was joking until now.
Sorry to mention it, I said, flustered. It's not bad. I like it.
Thanks.
He smiled and pushed the notebook toward me.
So today we're doing a diagnostic exam. It tells me what you know and what we can work on. Don't worry about getting it all right. We use this to plan your lessons.
I opened the notebook and picked up the freshly sharpened pencil. It smelled like math tests and poetry and all the dreams I once took for granted. Then I looked at the first page.
This is the alphabet, I said.
Very good, and by month's end, you will know it all. Go ahead and read out loud for me each one you know, and circle the ones you don't.
Of course it was the alphabet. I got so excited to be in a learning center and meet a teacher again that I forgot this was a place to teach people how to read. I wasn't here to learn. I was window dressing in case someone came by.
Don't worry about getting it wrong, he encouraged. Mistakes happen. If you knew everything, there'd be no point in being here.
That's the thing, I said. I know all my letters.
Well, that's what the diagnostic is for. If you know your letters, we can move on to connecting them, and then we can start on books. By the end of this program, you won't just know your letters, you'll be reading whole books.
He picked up a basket of books and set them on the table. Pictures of kittens and puppies smiled up at me. I looked at the one on top. It was the story of the cat that raised mice. The same story I read to Safa and Rabia not long ago.
The last book I finished was Benazir Bhutto's biography, I said.
Bhutto's biography?
His smile faded.
I don't understand. If you can read, why did they send you here?
The silence stretched between us. When he spoke again, his words were flat.
Let me guess. The man who paid for this center is running for office?
I nodded.
So this was a publicity stunt, and you're here in case a journalist shows up and reports on an empty building?
If I said yes, would he tell Jawed Saab?
This isn't the first time, he sighed before I had a chance to reply. Well, whatever the reason, there are plenty of people here who need this center. I spent the morning taping flyers on nearly every door in this and the other neighboring villages. It just takes one person to get the community to warm up.
They won't come.
Why wouldn't they? He looked startled.